This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into 5-on-3, WFUV Sports' best, if only, hockey podcast. We are back for the first episode of 2026 after a brief hiatus for Christmas and New Year's. We've got myself, Tucker Austin. We've also got Sophia Smith and Max Spitza with me here today. It's Friday, January 9th, so we're a little over a week into the new year. We're also at the halfway point of the season. That was on January 3rd, so just a little bit past the halfway point in the NHL season. But before we get into everything that we got to talk about today, how are you guys doing? Sophia, we can start with you.
I'm doing okay. I'm a little bit worried about starting school back up again, but excited to get like back in the actual studio rather than Zoom pods. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm doing pretty good. One more semester left, so pretty excited about it. Also need to hopefully see some Rangers wins as we go on. The Winter Classic, as we'll get into, is very fun to watch, but it's kind
the Rangers are definitely looking for some wins. We'll get into them when we check in with our three metro area teams. We'll also touch on some of the stories from around the NHL, but first we have to address the international stage. We've got Olympic hockey coming up less than 2 months away now, the 2026 Winter Olympics in Milano Cortina in Italy. NHL players back in the Olympics for the first time since 2014. Team USA and Team Canada's, along with everybody else's rosters, have come out. But Team USA and Team Canada are the two that we're going to focus on here. And really, I just wanted to kind of get reactions straight off the top. There are some notable guys missing, maybe, from the Team USA roster. Team Canada's roster started getting banged up in the NHL right after they were announced. But what were your guys' thoughts on the rosters when they did come out? Sophia, let's start with you again here.
Well, obviously no Adam Fox really hurt me personally. I don't really understand the decision-making at all. Obviously he's injured now, and so is Seth Jones, so we'll see what happens with that. But also, like, Trocheck and Miller making it and not Caulfield, I have a lot of questions, and that's why I'm kind of like leaning more towards Canada, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be very interesting. I do like the U.S. lineup. I do agree. I think Trocheck and Miller, having both of them on the team, was very interesting. And it's also very interesting because the U.S. did just lose to Finland in the World Juniors, didn't even make it to the final. Which was a big surprise. So,
and neither did Canada, which was a really interesting development. The World Juniors is over, but it's an all non-USA Canada final.
Yeah, and I think just like usually the U.S. kind of has that. You know, the last couple of years they've had the World Juniors, and I mean you just had the Four Nations. But I think the U.S. is definitely playing with a little bit more of a chip on their shoulder after the Four Nations. So I think that will help carry them through. And I do think their defense is probably much better than Canada's, just with injuries and everything included. So
the goaltending, too. I totally agree.
The goaltending's much better. Both of you guys.
The goaltending for the Team USA is just much more solid than goaltending for Team Canada. I mean, Jordan Binnington got named to this Canada roster, and he's been having a really rough season in St. Louis. For Team USA, it's Connor Hellebuck, Jake Ottinger, and Jeremy Swayman. Swayman's been playing great in Boston and kind of been helping them have a better season than they were expected to have. The Jets are struggling, but it's definitely not fully on Hellebuck. And then Ottinger, of course, is on the Stars. The Stars, one of the better teams in the NHL this year, thanks in part to his play. I think it was kind of heresy for me not to have Oscar Robertson on that Team USA roster. He is just so talented for the Stars as well. And yeah, like you guys mentioned, like Trocheck being on this roster is kind of a question mark for me. Even JT Miller, which like I get it, like he threw the gloves down in the USA Canada game in Four Nations. You get that kind of like antagonism and a little bit of juice out of him, but not as much of the scoring, especially when you compare him against a guy like Oscar Robertson, who's been scoring out of his mind over the past calendar year. But either way, that being said, is there a team out of the list so far that might have an edge, or at least between Team USA and Canada? Personally, I know Canada won the Four Nations, but Team USA did win the first game, and I really think that, like, with the goaltending question marks for Team Canada, I think Team USA will have an edge over Team Canada going into the Olympics. But what do you guys think? Max, we can start you here.
I mean, I think it's really interesting because obviously in the Olympics you can't fight. So I think that was a big factor, and you also had a lot of other aspects to that Four Nations where you had the booing of the national anthem before, maybe lit a fire under Team USA. I do think just with the forwards in mind that Canada is at an advantage just because of the rules in the Olympics. There's a lot, less hitting, definitely no fighting. So it's really, I think, more of skill in the Olympics instead of what you'd usually see in the NHL. But I think it'll be close. I think it'll be Team USA, Team Canada. Hopefully they set it up in a way that those two can be in the final. I mean, obviously not a shame for certain reasons that Russia's not in it, but I mean, if Russia was in it, I would actually probably end up saying Russia would be in the finals against either Canada or the US. But luckily for Canada and the US, that's not happening. So I think hopefully US comes on top. I think Finland's going to be the biggest obstacle for either team. Sweden is a little difficult, but mostly Finland. So I think it'll be interesting, but it's hard to see because everyone's getting injured right now. You really don't know who's going to be healthy in two months at this point. So yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree about the injury stuff. I really like Team Sweden, but again, you can't, just from what we've seen in the past with like the Four Nations and stuff and like these rosters, it's hard to say that US and Canada won't be in the final. But I do think that like the forwards, obviously Canada has the edge. And then we saw Jordan Binnington was enough for them to win that final game in Four Nations. They didn't need like the spectacular goaltending coming from Canada, but beyond that. So I don't know. It's gonna be interesting. Definitely. I'm really excited about it. And I want US to win, but I really think it's a toss-up. So
Yeah, I definitely agree that Canada, they have a bit of an edge in terms of the forwards, and it's sort of not fair because you look at guys like Connor McDavid, just incredible. Sidney Crosby, who hasn't really aged a day, he's still playing great in Pittsburgh. Nathan MacKinnon, like Macklin Celebrini made the
yeah.
team as a team, like really insane, and he's having a great year in San Jose too. And just up and down the forward group, Canada is really, really loaded. But when it comes to the defense and when it comes to the goaltending, I definitely like the USA. So I think USA has an edge. But Sophia, I agree with you that Sweden could be a bit of a dark horse in this Olympics. They played pretty well in the Four Nations. They actually beat Team USA during that group stage round robin play. Took the Canadians to overtime. The Swedish showing in the Four Nations was excellent, and I'm sure they definitely want to try and get some revenge coming into this Olympics, especially with all the Team USA versus Team Canada chatter. It was the same in the Four Nations, how Finland and Sweden kind of got pushed aside, and the focus was on USA and Canada. It feels the same for this Olympics, and that's a place where a team like this Sweden or Finland, Max, could really kind of shake some things up as sort of an unexpected squad. But yeah, really excited for the Olympics. That's coming up. I believe they start in February. I don't know if they run into March or not, but very, very soon we're going to have best on best international hockey, and could not be more excited. But to the NHL now. We said at the start of the show, January 3rd was the halfway point of the season. So we're now almost a week removed from the halfway mark. The Sabres wound up with a 10-game win streak that ended last week. But I mean, Buffalo it seemingly turned a corner for that streak. Their 10th win was against the Dallas Stars of all teams. So a very solid way to end that 10-game win streak. They then dropped a game, but now they're back on two in a row. They beat the Rangers in their last game. But I mean, it's really funny to me because the Sabres are only just the second wild card in the East after having gone on a 10-game heater. That's how bad their start of the season was, but just like kind of funny there. Patrick Kane also, he became the fifth US-born player to reach 500 goals. So I thought it was worth mentioning that milestone for Kaner. Pretty cool there. But then also, Connor McDavid, I already mentioned him from Team Canada, absolutely filthy. And he's been doing that in the NHL. 17 game point streak now for McDavid, and he's got the Oilers humming. They're tied for the lead in the Pacific. And so I've got a little question that kind of spurs off of the Oilers running a little hot right now. The Panthers are very much so slipping. They've been in a rough stretch. They're going to get Matthew Tkachuk back soon. He's skating, but Sasha Barkov is still nowhere close to returning. So with the Panthers kind of finding themselves near the bottom of the Atlantic, is Edmonton sort of the team to beat now when it comes to the playoffs? Obviously, the Avs have been great this year. The Stars have been great this year. And you've got teams in both conferences that are looking to make that jump. But I still look at the teams that have made the Cup final the last 2 years in a row as like the teams to beat when it gets into the playoffs. But with the Panthers looking the way they are right now, is Edmonton the team in the NHL that you have to get past? Sophia, let me start with you here.
I mean, I would say yes, but obviously like you said, the Avalanche have just been unstoppable this season. I'm curious to see what happens with them in the playoffs, though, because this run that they're on is sort of similar to the Bruins, and then obviously the Bruins got knocked out in the first round. So I'm curious to see what happens with that. Obviously, Edmonton now don't have Stuart Skinner, so that issue is a little bit fixed. But there's not really a team in the East that. Like, I think the Cup's gonna go to the West, I feel, because there's not a team in the East that scares me at all, and I think that there's gauntlets in the West that just are not going to be taken over by the East. Like you said, obviously the Oilers, the Avalanche, the Stars, and then you just keep going down, and it seems like you can't like the teams in the East don't even match up, in my opinion, but.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's really going to go down to the West. I actually really like the Minnesota Wild. At least from what I've seen in person and on TV, they are play quick, they play physical. And I think what they do really well is they like to keep the other team on defense, as long as they can. They time their shift changes pretty well to, catch a team lacking on defense or even just tiring them out until, you put up enough goals against the best goalie in the league, you're still gonna get 2 to 3 goals a game. So, but I think the West, I mean, you have the obviously the Avalanche, the Stars, the Wild, and then you have the Edmonton, which I have a little bias just because my cousins are from Edmonton, so they're big Oilers fans. But I mean, it definitely is coming out of the West. The only team I would really say out of the East who I would be worried about in a way would be Carolina. I think the Hurricanes are a team that, when they're hot, especially in the playoffs, that it's a very unstoppable team. But who knows? Maybe someone on the East runs through everyone, and they have nice little breaks in between each game, and the West is just going to be a grind going to the final game of each series. So, but I really like the Wild. I think that they're young, and so I really like what they're bringing.
The East is just so weird this year because of how close it is. Like, you've got teams like the Panthers and Maple Leafs, and I mean, the Devils and Rangers, and technically the Capitals that are all out of playoff spots when all of those teams are probably looking to get into the playoffs and still honestly have a chance. All it takes is like one really hot week, maybe a hot couple of weeks to get yourselves back into a playoff spot. But yeah, the Hurricanes are going to be really hard to beat. They haven't really gotten over the hump of the second round that much in their times when they've gone to the playoffs. So with the East as open as it is, they could probably make that final. But I totally agree with you guys. It's going to be even more impossible to get over a team like the Avalanche or the Stars, or with the experience of the Oilers if they manage to get in, and those Minnesota Wild, they're sneaky. They made a little bit of noise in the playoffs last year, and now they've just continued to improve. The Wild, Stars, and Avalanche all have more points than any other team in the East, which it kind of tells you right there how that's been going for the Western Conference. The Hurricanes are going to be without Pyotr Kochetkov, though, for the rest of the season. He had surgery and is done for the year. But they've always kind of scraped together goaltending in Carolina. So not really worried about it for their sake there. I think it should be mentioned, though, really interesting. Top of the Atlantic right now is a tie, and it's the Montreal Canadiens and the Detroit Red Wings. And I don't think anybody had that on a bingo card going into this season. The Habs have been really, really good. They've been kind of a cardiac team this year. And then the Red Wings, this was something that they've been expecting for like a few years now, that they were supposed to jump up and consider like make it into the playoffs comfortably, not really be battling for that last wild card spot. But either way, we can sort of dive into the metro area teams now. We'll start with the New York Rangers here. Certainly not the best team in the metro area. That crown goes right now to the New York Islanders, who I mean, to everyone's surprise, pretty much managed to find themselves fairly comfortably competing in the metro. I mean, there are games here and there where they don't look great, but I mean, as a Devils fan and as the Devils reporter for WFUV Sports, I can tell everyone firsthand that they're definitely better than the Devils. But either way, we'll start with the Rangers here, and we can start with the Winter Classic because that's pretty much the only positive note for the New York Rangers in the past like week or so. They or really past 2 weeks, they've lost five of their last six. The one win in that stretch was the Winter Classic. And Sophia, you got to go to the game. You're there as a fan, right? Yeah, so there is a fan, but still, you got, how was the experience like overall? Of course, you got the Rangers win, which I'm sure was nice, but like, what was the atmosphere like in South Florida?
It was absolutely awesome. And like going into this game, like when they first announced it, I was like, this is gonna be awesome. Like, this is just like the concept is awesome. And there was so much hate, even like after the game, so much hate being like Winter Classic should be played in a, you know, winter climate. Florida doesn't deserve this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you weren't there, and everyone that was there, I know, had a great time. And obviously, like, if you're not a Rangers fan, the game itself was probably disappointing. I had a great time because thank God they won that game, because I would have been sad. But no, the atmosphere was awesome. I thought that like they did a really great job with the theming. I had the venue. That stadium was really nice. Obviously, the Marlins don't get as much traction and probably haven't had a full stadium in a while, so the concourses themselves were a little bit tight. I feel like my brother and I spent like 20 minutes trying to get over to find Lydia Perner, just with all the people. But it was really, really fun. And I was down for Role Model's performance for intermission. And like it was like, who's gonna be Sally? Like, is it gonna be Paul Bignett? Who is it? And there's been also a lot of discourse about Matthew Tkachuk and Barkov coming out as Sally with the Stanley Cup. And there's always going to be discourse around the Panthers and everything that they do. I actually didn't have a problem with it. I thought that, you know, like, they are the reigning champions. They won it 2 times in a row. I didn't have a problem with it, seeing it, and then seeing people be like, it's weird that like active roster NHL players are hoisting around the Stanley Cup in the middle of the season, which, like, yeah, that's weird. But they're injured, and they are the reigning cup champions. I don't know. I thought it was fun. The performance was fun. The game was awesome. There was a lot of Rangers fans there. Yeah, I had a great time.
Heard Jazz Chisholm was there. You mentioned the Marlins,
Yes.
former
Yes.
Marlins player, current New York Yankee Jazz Chisholm was in attendance with that Rangers Yankees connection. So I thought that was cool. Also, Mika Zibanejad hat trick out of pretty much nowhere. I mean, he's been really struggling this year. Like he probably wants to play every game outside, I think.
Yeah, no, the whole team does. They're 6-0 outdoors. Ridiculous.
But yeah, I mean, Outside of that, though, I mean, that was a pretty good bright spot. They got a nice feel-good win against the defending Stanley Cup champion Panthers. But as we said earlier in the show, the Panthers have kind of been riding the struggle bus as of late. So take the win with a grain of salt. They've lost the other five of their last six games. They lost last night 5-2 against the Sabres in Madison Square Garden. And it was just a really weird thing for me when I was like prepping for this show. I was looking at the Rangers, like in terms of their team stats, how they square up against the rest of the league. Doesn't really seem like the Rangers are playing like outwardly bad. It's more that they're like all of their stats kind of pull in right in the middle. Like looking at like power play, looking at penalty kill, all of the extra stats, and it kind of just they just fall in the middle. But that's not how the results are playing out. So it seems a bit like a discrepancy to me that they're not particularly bad in any category. So like, I mean, Max, you've been covering the Rangers a little bit this year. Sophia, you're a Rangers fan. I figured you guys would be good people to ask this. Why are the results so bad when the team is producing like middle of the pack stats?
I mean, if you just watch any of the games, whether they score first, they score not at all, the team looks the exact same. They seem to lack a lot of energy. I mean, it's every time because being from Arizona, there's not a lot of hockey out here, so I am a transplant Rangers fan as of like my junior year of high school or whatever. But my buddies and I will text about it all the time. One goal will happen, we're like, oh. It's going to be a 3-2 loss now. Like they're going to end up losing this game. And it's not anything to do with how they're playing. Panarin is great. I mean, you talk about the Winter Classic. Larfineri had three assists that game, which with a season that he's having an okay season, but like it was good to see that. And I mean, like it's just you see JT Miller talking about it a lot, about like the team giving their 100%, showing a little bit more passion on the ice. Thing is, like, I don't know if he's necessarily showing it either. I think that the team is just kind of lacking that culture they had for the last couple of years, where it was maybe we're not the best team on the ice right now, overall or skill wise, but we're going to make sure that it's a hard, especially at MSG, it's a hard team to beat. And this year, you just haven't had that. I mean, you look at it a lot too, a lot of overtime losses, which. I mean, they play a great game, they get to overtime, and then it seems like the other team scores in a minute and a half in overtime. So, those have been rough. You can only say at least we got a point so many times before it's kind of like maybe we shouldn't have given up that last goal or maybe something like that. So, that's, I mean, they play great games. I think beginning of the year, they were really sloppy. They cleaned up a lot of their defense. They're starting to put the puck on the other side of the ice a lot more often, which you weren't seeing at the beginning of the year. Now it just needs to be helping out. I mean, Shesterkin's hurt right now, but obviously Jonathan Quick is the best guy in the world. He should have been on Team USA as like a morale guy, but
The glue guy.
yeah, he would have been a great glue guy. Would have loved seeing him strap in. But no, but I mean, I think that's what it really goes down to is just their passion. On the ice, you see it some games, but it's not there the whole game. And I think it starts with guys like Rempe, who he's there to be a big guy in the presence. Maybe throw a couple guys into the glass, maybe throw some punches. But if you haven't even seen that from him this year, he's lost both or all his fights that he's had this year. So it just seems like there's something missing in the locker room that, like, I don't know who's gonna find that. I think they thought a new head coach was gonna find that. I think they thought. JT Miller was gonna bring that out of everyone. But I don't know. I mean, the classic was cool and then they lose 5-2. So it's like, can you really like I thought the classic was gonna be a turning point, just because the way they played, and then it was like they were a completely different team the next game. So I don't know.
No, that's exactly what I'm thinking because they just have no identity, they have no consistency, and like no momentum. They even like eat in during a game, and then also like when they have a really good win, there's no like momentum or progression forward. Like last night, I was at the game, and they The third period, like Sullivan said post game, that it was one of the best periods that they've played in a while. And it started off, they were down 3-1, and then Trocheck scored like a minute in to make it 3-2. And then they played phenomenal, getting the chances, just couldn't finish. And then they, with 5 minutes and 30 seconds left, they get a double minor, like 4 minute power play. And immediately, Lafreniere turns the puck over, and it's 4-2 Sabres. And it's like, before that, like they were on fire. They just couldn't finish, and the crowd was super into it. And like when the penalty was called, and then ends up in the back of your own net. And like the same thing happened at the beginning of the game. They came out with a jump, and then one mistake, and they're down 1-0. And they've had like the Winter Classic, like you said, like they had a great game, and then they lost to Utah, and then they lost again last night. And they've had some really good comeback wins this season, like a few games where they come back in the third period, win in overtime. And you just think that it's going to like bring the vibes up, like that it's going to continue, and it doesn't. They've had, I think, three game win streaks this season, and beyond that, have not gone on any sort of run at all. And that's the problem. It's like with the East, like one run would get them in. And it doesn't look like it's happening because they're just so inconsistent, and they can't get any sort of momentum or progression, or it's mind-boggling. And like the puck luck stuff is unfortunate too, just because like it does feel like they, at certain points, they do seem to want it. They are trying their best, and it just they can't finish. And with the injuries too, now Fox is out and Igor, it doesn't seem like the pieces are all gonna fit together at like soon enough. It's really unfortunate and frustrating. I know that the players are really frustrated, but at the end of the day, like you said, we just haven't seen it enough from JT Miller and from the rest of the team. I just haven't seen it enough of that want and urgency that you need to get into that playoffs.
And I feel like even if you look back to when the Avalanche were at MSG, they had that game in the bag, and then the refs don't call a high stick goal, and then they review Panarin's goal for obstruction, and it's just like the team isn't getting very lucky, which I feel like is a big part when you're playing such a long season. And so even those like I mean, at the same time, though, it's like you probably win that game against the Avalanche if they don't have that high stick goal. You should probably be a little more excited, and then you don't really see it in the games coming after. So it's like it's weird. Hopefully the Olympics help a little bit. Hopefully it gives everyone like a time to chill. Maybe Trocheck plays really well. Maybe JT Miller plays really well and brings it over. But I mean, you really never know with how they played this year. So.
Yeah, and it just really seems like the Rangers are kind of struggling to keep any kind of momentum after a win, and like every game is kind of a super isolated incident, and then they move on. Really, I think it also kind of is, you can chalk it up to growing pains a little bit, just because I mean, new head coach this year after the locker room kind of fell apart at the end of last year. So maybe some wounds still healing in that regard. I think Rangers fans probably expected a little bit too much out of this season coming in, where like not necessarily like throw the season away, but really like kind of just not expect too much out of the first year with a new head coach for the New York Rangers, just because they got to try and figure things out. And clearly, it seems like they are still trying to figure things out. But you get a flash of a game like the Winter Classic against the Panthers, and it's like this is what could exist, especially Mika Zibanejad's performance in that game, because I mean, he could be like that more of the time, but he just hasn't been at the like end of last year, and then now all of this year so far. But either way, we can move towards the New York Islanders now. The Rangers' next game is going to be tomorrow, as of this recording, 1 p.m. against the Bruins. But moving to the Islanders, who just last week waxed the New Jersey Devils 9-0 at the UBS Arena. That was part of a much bigger issue for the New Jersey Devils. But the Islanders have maintained a position as one of the best teams, or the best team in the New York City area in hockey, one of the best teams in the East. In terms of the standings, for some time now, they did lose last night in a shootout at the Nashville Predators. But overall, the Islanders have been having a pretty good go of it, powered by the kid, Matthew Schaefer, who's brought a whole lot of energy into that organization and pretty much turned them from like barely battling for the last wild card spot to now being in a pretty comfortable position in terms of the playoffs. The other night against the Blue Jackets, we saw pretty good response out of the Islanders, I would say, to Schaefer caught a knee from Mason Marchment of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and then Matt Barzal on the other end, two-handed slash straight to the shoelace of Marchment. It was a great moment. Looked right out of Shoresy, if you ask me. But really, like, cool response for like the kid on your team takes it a bit of a cheap shot with the knee from Marchment. So that was great to see. The Islanders look really, really good, but injuries have still kind of been like a shadow over the Islanders a little bit. They kind of injuries are always an issue for this team, seemingly, and especially for this guy, Bo Horvat, who is down again. He's got a lower body injury. They haven't disclosed what exactly it is yet, but he is staying in New York. The Islanders are on, I had to double take when I looked at this, a 7-game road trip to the West Coast for the New York Islanders, and Bo Horvat will be in New York the entire time. So missing at least the next 7 games, unless they fly him out in the middle of the trip. But I suppose the question, and that was right after he got named to Team Canada too. So even more weird stuff happening there with players kind of dropping all over the place who got named to Olympic rosters. But Bo Horvat going down. Sophia, you're one of our Islanders beat reporters for this year. And Max, you can weigh in on this too, if you have thoughts here. But scale of like 1 to 10, how worried should Islanders fans be and the Islanders organization be about this Horvat injury? Reportedly, it's not linked to the one that he came back from earlier this year, but he stayed home for a 7-game trip. Like, is that sort of just precautionary, or is this kind of a it's worse than we thought situation?
Well, they said that he could join the trip at the end of the trip, and then it, I don't know, they don't seem too worried. I would give it like a 4 or 5. I'm not too worried, and yeah, they said that if it's not the end of this trip, it's not the end of the world, but he is set to return before the Olympic break. So I think that this is kind of just precautionary, just making sure that he's getting the right treatment and like not like playing on something that could make it worse. He's obviously a big part of this team, and they're going to need him down the stretch. So, yeah, I wouldn't be too concerned about this.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. They're playing so well right now as a team, so I don't really think missing him is going to be too major for them. I do agree when you're talking about them protecting their young star. I think that's great to see because obviously they're usually going to protect the young guys, especially if they're more of a skills player. I mean, you see that with Bedard sometimes as well because he's a smaller guy and he's not going up against the vets who are much bigger. But it is good to see though, because it was quick. It was definitely out of Shoresy is exactly what I thought when I saw it. But really good to see. I mean, it's crazy to think he's only 18, and I mean, I don't know what I was doing at 18, but it definitely wasn't helping a team dominate the league. So very cool to see just his teammates stepping up for him.
And he's just looking more and more comfortable as time goes on. Yeah, what do you got, Sophia?
Oh, I just like I it was very interesting last night being like in the Rangers locker room post game. Obviously they lost the game, so it wasn't like it's just the difference 'cause I don't think I've witnessed a loss at UBS this season. I'm pretty sure they've won every time I've gone. So the difference though in the like vibes and just like at MSG, it just seems like everyone's like down in the dumps. Like there's like they're kind of they were kind of positive last night, even saying like, oh, this was like we played the game that we wanted to play, just didn't get the result. But like that takes a toll. Whereas the Islanders are always in a good mood. They're like Patrick Waugh is like cracking jokes post game. And it just shows how much the Islanders, like Schaefer obviously has a lot to do with that, but also like they have just created something that like I never saw coming. Grace and I were talking before the season, like we really didn't think that this team was going to be anything, and they're probably the only team in the metro area in New York that's going to make the playoffs. So yeah, it was just fascinating to see this stark difference in the two locker rooms. Like I said, the Rangers lost, and I haven't witnessed an Islanders loss, but that tells you all you need to know right there. So
I mean, it seems like the Islanders have almost like a baseball look into their season. It's like we're pretty good. Like we're gonna lose games every once in a while. The Rangers is almost like let's just get through this season. Maybe we'll make it. Maybe we won't. But I agree. Every time you walk in that locker room, it's just like it's dead silence. Like yeah, you just lost the game, but it's also like you just. You just took a point from the best team in the West or something like that. And it's like, I remember after the Avalanche game, everyone was just like extremely upset. And it was kind of just like, you guys played a great game. I don't know why you were necessarily expecting to dominate this team that has the most points in the entire league. But yeah, I agree. I think the Rangers are like, they're just like, oh my God, how many games do we have left? And the Islanders are like, oh, like what are we doing tonight, guys? Like, yeah, we lost, but thank God we have another game this next week. So it's like
Hey,
definitely
we lost,
different
but thank God we have
mentalities.
Matthew Schaefer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like
No,
Schaefer,
but
we're gonna go drive up to Canada so you can celebrate with us.
yeah, no, it's such a valuable attribute to have for a team when you can like lose a game but be able to shake it off. It's just like, yeah, we're gonna lose sometimes, but like there's another opportunity 2 nights from now where we're gonna go try and win again. And it's almost like this Isles team is playing with like nothing to lose. And it's not like they have necessarily anything to lose, but it's sort of just the mindset that they have. It's the only way I can really describe the mindset that they have. And it's a good one. It's a good mindset to have, clearly, because they're second in the Metro right now. The Islanders' next game is also tomorrow, as of this recording, Saturday, January 10th at 8 p.m. at the Minnesota Wild. Should be a good test for a young Islanders squad against a top team in the West. Now, though, we have to talk about the New Jersey Devils. Unfortunately, at this point, the Devils are, without mincing words, the Devils are in free fall. They gave up 12 unanswered goals across 2 games after fans effectively booed Luke Hughes out of the building on Sunday versus the Carolina Hurricanes. This was after Luke Hughes was entirely responsible for an own goal and then was mostly responsible defensively for a goal scored by Taylor Hall, but it was the first 2 goals of the game for Carolina, and those 2 goals were enough to get Carolina the win. They would win 3-1, but the Devils could only muster a goal in that game, and so Devils fans really gave it to Luke Hughes. A lot of people have come out, especially within the Devils organization. People within the Devils organization, that is, have come out in defense of Luke Hughes. There have been some on social media who have argued that his 9 million AAV contract should sort of give the fans a little bit of credence towards deciding to boo him. But either way, personally, I think it was a bit of a rough look just because Luke is the youngest kid on the team. And yes, he's making 9 million AAV, but he's still young, still finding his way in the league. And he's still really, really talented. He just had a couple of rough bounces. Obviously, the first goal, not really excusable, but the second goal, certainly. And they only started booing him after the second goal. So I get that it was a snowball effect, but overall, I really don't think that the Devils fans should have taken that route, at least the ones who decided to boo. There were fans in attendance who decided not to. But the Devils then turned out to be a dead fish of a team after that because they lost 9-0 at the New York Islanders, as we already mentioned. And then the Pittsburgh Penguins put up 3 goals before the Devils finally scored in a 3-1 loss to Pittsburgh in their last game. And just the Devils in general have really taken a nosedive, this time since a little bit before the Christmas break. And it really traces back to when Jack Hughes hurt his hand in the quote unquote freak accident at the dinner in Chicago. Jack really hasn't looked the same since he returned from that hand injury. The Devils GM Tom Fitzgerald is also dodging the media now, as it turns out. He says he's still after a top six forward, but the media has been trying to get to him for some time now, and he's been sort of skirting the local Newark, New Jersey media while still doing interviews for some outside of New Jersey outlets. Arseniy Grichuk has been really the one bright spot in this season so far for the Devils, along also with Colton White, who's turned out to be a pretty solid bottom six guy. White, who really was relatively unknown to Devils fans coming into the season, started to put in some solid performances and is starting to get some shout outs on social media as well. But Arseniy Grichuk, really, he is a absolute stud. He's only going to get better. But it's just tough that in his rookie year, the Devils were supposed to have a team that was really, really solid around him, but things haven't really shaken out so far. You look at Dougie Hamilton, he continues to be nowhere close to the kind of player that New Jersey needs him to be. And he reportedly also shut down two trades in the past year, the Devils trying to deal him, one of which may or may not have hampered the Devils' ability to go after Quinn Hughes. Dougie Hamilton has heavy control over his destiny and what the Devils decide to do with him. So he's apparently shut down two trades where the Devils tried to move him to make room to bring in some other assets. Reporter also asked Sheldon Keefe after the Penguins loss that they asked him about job security, and I thought it was pretty much rock bottom that you have media members asking the head coach about his job security when Sheldon Keefe is really, he's only still just taken over the Devils. It's his second year at the helm, but like media members are already asking him if he feels his job is safe. I don't understand that at all. Sheldon Keefe can in no way take the blame for this team because it was almost entirely constructed before he was the head coach for the New Jersey Devils. Sure, there were some players that were brought in last offseason to sort of help him out, but while he was the head coach already, but it's really not, it's not something, the Devil struggles right now, not something that I could see Sheldon Keefe really taking blame for. The good news, though, for the Devils is that there's still almost a full half of the season left to sort of figure things out. This is still a really talented team when you look at the roster on paper. They haven't been figuring it out in recent games, but again, there's plenty of time left and the standings are really tight in the East, so it only takes a really solid week or two to sort of propel a team back into the playoff conversation. And the Devils had had their eyes on the Stanley Cup coming into this season, so it's really, it's going to be a waiting game to see if Tom Fitzgerald can make that crucial move that will get the Devils moving in the right direction again. But as of right now, the just the vibe generally around the team and in the locker room, it seems to be pretty down and trying to dig themselves out of a hole, that really a hole that didn't exist a month ago, but now definitely does exist because with how competitive the rest of the league is, the Devils have been struggling for long enough that they've now become a little bit buried in the standings, near the bottom of the Metro, not in a playoff position at this time. But again, plenty of time left. The Devils' next game is going to be Sunday, January 11th at 2 p.m. at the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets have been just really awful this year. Whisperings of them finishing last after winning the President's Trophy last year. So the Devils definitely looking at a game that's sort of a must win, now having dropped two games in a row on this road trip. Gonna need the win at Winnipeg to get things back on track. But that is just about gonna wrap us up on today's episode of 5 on 3. Thanks so much to Sophia Smith and to Max Spitza for joining me today. But that is going to wrap us up. We covered a whole lot in this, the first episode of 2026. We're happy to be back. And hopefully, in the next episode next week, hopefully, we'll be back in the studio at Rose Hill. But for now, for today, I have been Tucker Austin, and 5 on 3 is a production of WFUV Sports.